May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
This happened over a decade ago when I was 12 years old. I live in a small town in Oklahoma, and in my neighborhood, the houses are fairly spread apart, separated by woods. It was a school day, so my grandma picked me up from school and brought me home. This was the first year that I got dropped off at my house alone.
May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Before this, I would just go to my grandma's house after school. I would get dropped off at around 3 p.m. and my parents would be home around 4:30, so not that big of a deal. Today, for some reason, my dad wasn't going to be home until later, around 7, and my mom, a teacher, wouldn't be home until around 8 because she had parent-teacher conferences at the school. This happened in early fall, so it wouldn't even be that dark until like 8:30. I did what I usually did when I got home. I ran upstairs, got on my Xbox 360, and played Minecraft with my friends. Today, it was just me and my friend Seth. I was playing for about 2 hours when I heard a car door shut in my driveway. No one should have been there until like 7 p.m. My house is set up so that my upstairs has windows that look over my driveway. So, with my mic on and controller in hand, I went to the window to see who it was. Maybe my dad got home earlier than expected. I looked outside. It was a red truck. Nobody that I know drives a red truck. The person pulled into the middle of the driveway sideways, like he owned the place. When I looked out the window, I saw a man with a hat, wearing a big camo hoodie and jeans. It was September, so no one should have been wearing a big hoodie and jeans in Oklahoma. By the time I looked, he was already almost out of view, going up my walkway to my front door. I thought maybe it was one of my dad's friends or somebody my dad hired to do something, but he would usually tell me if someone was going to be coming over. Soon after, I hear a knock at the door, then another. I go to my other window that has a better view of the walkway up to my front door. I see the guy walking back down the walkway. I switch and go back to looking through the windows overlooking my driveway. I'm relaying all of this to Seth, still with my mic on. I tell Seth that he's walking back to his truck now. Instead, he walks past his truck and tries to open my garage side door. At this point, my heart sinks. I tell Seth that this guy just tried to get into my house. Mind you, it is literally broad daylight at like 5 p.m. Luckily, it was locked because sometimes we forget to lock it. After he tried the door, he started walking to my back patio. I dropped my headset and I quietly ran downstairs to see what he is doing. I get downstairs and stand behind the wall so I'm not visible from the back door or living room windows. I just listen. I hear him try to open the door. Then I hear a thud. It sounded like he dropped a brick on the ground or something. At this point, I'm more scared than I've ever been in my life. I wanted to call my parents or grandma, but I didn't have a cell phone yet. The only phone in the house was in my kitchen. I would have to cross my living room to get there, and you'd be able to see me if I went in there. A few seconds after the thud, I peeked around the corner, and he was gone. I ran back upstairs and put my headset back on, telling Seth that he just tried to open the back door as well. As I'm telling him this, I hear a car door shut. This time, when I look out the window, he finally gets in his truck. I looked at the truck closer, and I noticed the only thing he had in his truck bed was a crowbar and a shovel. He sat in his truck for what felt like a few minutes. During this time, Seth told me to get my iPod and take a picture of his license plate. He was parked where I couldn't see him. Then he drove backwards out of my driveway and down the road. A few minutes after he was confirmed gone, I went downstairs to see what the thud could have been. I get to the back door and see that the doormat was moved. Both big plant pots had been moved as well. He was looking for a key. We have a hidden key back there too. Key to the back door was under one of the smaller plant pots on a ledge near the door, not the bigger ones that he had checked under. I went to the front porch and all the pots looked like they had been moved too. I don't know what I would have done if he was able to find the key or if he just broke in. After he left, I called my dad and told him what happened. When my dad got home, he had a cop come over and I told him what happened and gave him a description. Guy never came back. About 3 days ago, when my mother had left to meet my grandparents who lived abroad, my brother decided to celebrate his summer freedom by going to a local market and picking up a number of bootleg games for our PlayStation 2. We'd had the console equipped with a chip that enabled us to play fake games since the originals were far too expensive to keep buying. That night, we decided to sit down and play one of the games. It was supposed to be a copy of Silent Hill 2, but when we popped the CD into the console, we realized that it was actually a regular DVD with some videos on it. My brother and I, along with a friend of ours who was present, decided to watch the first video and see how entertaining it was, with a resolution that in the morning, the DVD would be taken back to the guy who sold it to my brother in the first place. The first video was a 10-minute shot of a secluded road. It seemed to be extremely late, and in the shot, there was a pair of young women. They seemed a bit tipsy, and the camera followed them at a distance as they walked around the neighborhood and then finally into a building. The next clip was more unnerving than the last. Two hands were using a lockpicking set to try and open a door. All three of us watching inhaled sharply as the lock clicked and the door swung open. There was an unsettling silence as the camera person slid into the house quietly. As the camera panned to record the living room, the person behind the camera began to pant heavily. They then began to make their way into the house. Having found the bedroom, they walked inside, still breathing heavily, then zoomed in on the sleeping woman's face. We recognized her as one of the tipsy women from the earlier video. A hand bearing a knife suddenly appeared on the screen and began caressing the sleeping woman's cheek with a knife. The other hand pulled the covers back and started to grope the woman. The knife slowly slid down from the woman's cheek to her throat. All this time, the camera person was breathing heavily. Then the video ended. There were more videos of women being followed and then of houses being broken into. We guessed that the houses were probably those of the women that the voyeur had been following. We watched all of them, getting more and more freaked out, until I realized the woman being followed in the last video was my mother. Judging by her clothes, it had been shot a few days ago, probably the very day she had left for the airport. I began to panic. There was still lots of space on the DVD, which meant that if the voyeur had broken into my house, the evidence would have been on the disc. My mother had been gone for only 2 days, and I was so shaken that I asked my brother's friends if my brother and I could stay at his house. He readily agreed. The next morning, the three of us returned to my apartment filled with apprehension. The lock did not appear to have been tampered with, and I had to unlock the door to enter. The house looked exactly as we had left it last night, scattered crisp packets and all. I was about to heave a sigh of relief before I saw the message above my bed. In what appeared to be blood, somebody had written in capital letters, "It pains me that both the ladies of this house have denied me an audience. It pains me so much that I bleed." I called the police immediately, but upon arrival, they concluded that the blood was some scarlet nail polish that had been taken from my dresser and tried to brush it off as a prank played on me by my brother and his friends. "Boys will be boys," said the female officer to me before she left. But I was so disturbed that I decided to stay at my brother's friend's house till my mother got home. However, I decided to take the DVD with me as proof and to set up an old laptop in my bedroom that had a webcam, linking it to my personal laptop with Log Me In so I could see if anyone broke in again. Log Me In lets me remotely access any laptop I sync with my regular laptop. I can see the desktop of that computer and use any other programs, including the webcam. This evening, as I was accessing my laptop and watching the webcam feed, I saw a shadow on one of the walls. Then a new window popped up, indicating that somebody was using the laptop simultaneously and had inserted a flash drive into one of the USB ports. I tried to shut the laptop down, but the other person using it opened Windows Explorer to play a movie file on the flash drive. The video was of me walking from my house into my brother's friend's bungalow with my luggage. All of a sudden, the video player was minimized, and in the webcam feed, I could see another message beneath the first one above my head. It read, "You dare to keep what is mine. I shall come to claim something of yours in exchange. You will bleed like me. Tonight, my brother's friend's parents are out at a dinner party. I can hear the front door clicking open, which is strange because my brother and his friend are sound asleep on the second floor of the bungalow." Edit. I have locked myself in an upstairs bedroom with my brother and his friend. The psycho is in my room. I can hear his shuffling. He's caught the phone lines, but we've called the police using my brother's cell phone. I have the DVD with me. I don't know if I should just throw it away. I feel like the police should see it, but then we get caught for buying the counterfeit games. What the heck should I do? Second edit. Can't say much, but the good news is that the cops are here at my friend's house and we all have to go to the station. The bad news is that the DVD broke. I'll try to post something soon. This happened last summer when I was 19. It was a Friday afternoon and I had the day off work. I live with my girlfriend in a small duplex outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. We moved in just a few months earlier and didn't know many of our neighbors yet. She was working a long shift that day, so I had the house to myself. Around 1 p.m., I was sitting at my desk in the living room, trying to finish an online course for work when I heard a knock at the door. It wasn't a light, polite knock, it was the kind where each thud rattles the wood. I assumed it was a delivery driver because we order stuff all the time. When I opened the door, though, there was no truck or van in sight, just a man standing on the porch holding a medium-sized cardboard box. He looked maybe in his mid-40s, scruffy, wearing jeans and a faded orange polo. No uniform, no logo on the box, no clipboard, nothing official about him. Delivery for, he squinted at the label. Logan Miller? That's me, I said, though something about his hesitation threw me off. He handed me the box quickly, then nodded and walked off down the street instead of to a vehicle. I remember watching him until he turned the corner and disappeared behind another house. I stood there for a second, uneasy. The box didn't have a shipping label or any kind of branding, just my name written in black marker. No address, no return, nothing. I took it inside anyway and set it on the kitchen counter. It wasn't heavy, maybe just a couple of pounds at most. My curiosity won over my suspicion, so I grabbed a knife and cut it open. Inside was a single Polaroid picture. It was a photo of me standing in the driveway, taken just seconds before I'd opened the door. I remember staring at it for a solid minute, my hands starting to shake. Then I grabbed my phone and went out front, scanning the street. There was nobody around. The neighborhood was quiet, with just the sound of cicadas in the trees. I called my girlfriend right away. She told me to lock the doors and call the police. I felt dumb doing it, like maybe it was just some stupid prank, but I called anyway. The officer who came by looked at the photo, looked around the porch, and basically told me the same thing. Probably a prank. You'd be surprised what bored teenagers get up to, he said. He took the picture, filled out a quick report, and left. I tried to shake it off, but I couldn't focus on anything the rest of the day. I double-checked every window, every lock. By the time it got dark, I'd calmed down a little. My girlfriend got home around 8, and I told her everything again. She thought it was creepy, but agreed with the cop. Probably some local kid trying to freak people out. That night, I set the box outside in the trash and went to bed. At around 2:30 a.m., I woke up to a soft thump. It came from the porch. I sat up and listened, heart pounding. Another thump. This one louder, followed by the faint sound of footsteps on the wood. I grabbed my phone, opened the blind just a crack, and looked out. There on the porch was another box. I could barely make out a figure walking down the street again. Same build and same weird pace. I didn't go outside. I called 911 immediately and told the dispatcher what was happening. She said that an officer was on the way and told me not to open the door. The minutes felt like hours. I just stood there watching through the blinds, waiting. By the time the police arrived, the man was long gone again. This time, though, the box was bigger. The officer, a different guy this time, opened it outside with gloves. Inside were more Polaroids, maybe a dozen of them. Each one of them showed the outside of our house, different angles. Some from the backyard, and the last one, taken through our living room window, showed me sitting on the couch. That was the moment the officer's tone changed. He told us to pack a bag and spend the night somewhere else. We drove to my girlfriend's parents' place and stayed there for a few days. While we were gone, police increased patrols around the neighborhood. They told us they checked the footage from the nearby doorbell cameras. A few days later, I got a call from the detective assigned to the case. He asked if I'd noticed anyone doing lawn or pest control recently. Anybody with access to yards or fences. Apparently, one of the neighbors a few streets over had reported a man pretending to work for a pest control company He had been knocking on doors asking about recent rat sightings, taking photos around homes, then leaving without ever doing anything. They suspected it might be the same person. A week later, they called again, and they finally caught him. He was a 47-year-old man named Raymond, a former maintenance worker who had been fired from another rental company months before. According to the detective, he'd been breaking into homes around the area, not to steal, but to leave small gifts, photos, trinkets, random items, as part of some kind of obsession. When they searched his van, they found dozens of boxes, each labeled with addresses of homes in our neighborhood, including ours. And in one of the boxes was another stack of Polaroids. The most recent ones were of me and my girlfriend sleeping in our bed. They never found out how he got those shots. None of those windows were tampered with, and the doors had stayed locked. The detective said the guy had an older master key set used for maintenance work years ago, and some of the locks in the neighborhood were never changed. We moved out less than a month later. I still don't know how long he'd been watching us or how many nights he'd been close enough to take those photos without us hearing a thing. Now, every time I see a plain cardboard box on somebody's porch, I feel that same chill run down my spine. Because the scariest part isn't that he took pictures. It's that he handed one to me personally, and I didn't even realize until it was too late. My mom was on her routine night shift at the hospital, and I knew I wouldn't see her till the next morning, probably in a deep sleep or her bed, likely still in her uniform. I always made her breakfast before I would leave for school in the morning so she could wake up to a nice meal. I use the word nice loosely. It's the best I could do considering I'm 16 and failed my home economics class last year. But my mom never minded the toast, scrambled eggs, and turkey bacon platter left on her nightstand. We had said our goodbyes around 10:15, and I got myself comfortable on the couch with my dog to watch some TV. I turned the lights off over us to set the scene and make it feel more immersive. I had gotten through one Dateline episode when I decided that I could enjoy the experience a little more if I grabbed my bong. So I went upstairs and down the long narrow hallway that led to my wing of the house. I was the only occupied room on this side of the house. The other rooms were my dad's old office and the guest room, though that room hasn't had a guest in it for years. Ever since my dad's passing, my mom and I haven't wanted to host other people here. Instead, it hosts the overload of clutter I find at the end of every school year. Clothes that I no longer want and plan on selling or donating. Paintings I worked months on but never hung up, and other miscellaneous items that aren't used but can't seem to be let go of either. I opened my bedroom door and grabbed the piece off my nightstand. It was almost a sculpture rather than the cheesy bong you might imagine when thinking of a stoner. It was about 16 inches tall and made completely out of this blue hand-blown glass that resembled the color the ocean looks after a series of rough waves. The glass swirled in an upward motion towards the mouthpiece that made it look like it was water frozen in time. My favorite feature of this prized possession is its ability to glow in the dark. After letting it sit in the sun for a bit, flecks in the glass would glow a bright green at night. I walked back down the hallway with it, then back down the stairs until I was sitting down on the couch next to my dog, Pepe. He was sound asleep as I started to grind up the green sticky plant matter, which was genuinely what the name was, plant matter. It was this new strain I had just bought from my regular plug from the next town over. He had told me he just recently got a limited supply of this stuff and asked me if I could be one of his test subjects to see if he should buy more. Without hesitation, I agreed. Discounted weed just to give my feedback. I'd be a fool not to take that offer, so I did. Holding it in my hand, I saw a multitude of colors that reflected off its crystals. It's common to see colors like purple and orange, but this stuff had shades of red, blue, and pink. Odd, I thought. But I was taken over by more intrigue than suspicion, so I continued to put some in the bowl and pack it down with my lighter. After the first inhale, I got the taste of ordinary weed, but it was soon followed by a slight trace of citrus. It was pleasant. I was paying extra attention to the experience so I could give a good detailed report back to the plug, like he had asked. About 15 minutes went by, Dateline was still playing, and the specific episode seemed to be extra interesting to me in my new hazy state. The cushions beneath me started to almost mold to my body. I felt as though I was sinking, yet weighed as light as a feather at the same time. My eyes started to get dry, and trying to keep them open became more of a task than a natural ability at this point. As I slowly started to move my eyes behind my lids, I realized that I had fallen asleep. It must have been for quite a while because I felt so sluggish, like it used all the strength within me, just to be able to fully open my eyes. The lights above the living room were still off, like I had left them, but all the others on the downstairs floor were too. Something I had not done. It was now pitch black everywhere except for the surrounding area where the light emitting from the TV could reach, which was not very far. The second thing I noticed was what sent a cold chill running through my body and caused my heart to stop momentarily. I was paralyzed. I was physically unable to move any part of my body other than my eyes, tips of fingers, and toes. I was only able to produce slight twitches, but it took so much strength out of me to do so. There I was, almost completely paralyzed, unable to move or scream for help while the TV continued the program like I was still an attentive, consenting viewer. Pepe was still sleeping soundly beside me, blissfully unaware of the living hell I was experiencing, just inches away from his sleeping little head. I tried reaching for him. Maybe he would wake up and sense my distress and then what? I thought to myself. What the heck could happen next that would possibly help me in the situation? The answer was nothing. I felt as though Keith Morrison was now mocking me, and the couch cushion below that, once felt made for me, was now stiff and cold, as if every fiber in the fabric was rejecting contact with my body. I reasonably started to panic, not because the realization of my situation was settling in, but because I heard a creak from upstairs. I knew this house like the back of my hand. It's the only house I have ever lived in, so I knew that each floorboard had its own distinct creak. And this one I recognized as the top of the stairs. Somebody was in my home and they were standing at the top of the staircase that led directly to the room I was in. Each crack that followed the last made my eyes water. The fear I felt distorted each sound to resemble what I might imagine a rib being snapped in half would make. Hearing the footsteps slowly descend the stairs made my stomach turn and my body want to writhe in pain from the inside out. Staring at the one visible stair from my position on the couch made me want to retreat backwards and find security in the couch. I did not want to see the intruder, the person who would be able to have their way with me in such a vulnerable state, but I could not rip my eyes from the stairs. I knew danger was coming, but I just couldn't look away. If somebody was going to do whatever evil they intended, I was going to see it, approaching, whether or not I truly wanted to. Seconds felt like minutes. My heart raced so fast that each beat felt moments apart. I was dripping in sweat, even though my body couldn't move. The sound from the TV gradually faded away and was replaced with a long, piercing ringing in its place. The creaks that belonged to the stairs near me echoed as the unidentified subject's weight pressed down on them. Through the dim lighting, I made out what seemed to be a shadowed hand gripping the side of the wall that obstructed my view of the stairs and the person on them. What broke the moment of silence was the faint, muffled scream coming from the back of my throat. It was the only amount of sound I could muster up in my frozen state. I was a deer in headlights, the perfect victim for any predator. It was hard to say whether I was still paralyzed or if it was the sheer terror I felt in that moment that was responsible for my immobilization. The hand methodically lifted its fingers and slowly tapped each one of them back down, creating a sickening drumming sound. One, then twice, then three times the lone hand strums before the rest of the body became slightly illuminated when it moved to the last and final stair. As its entire form was revealed, my wide eyes trailed up to about 8 feet in the air. It was gigantic. Its arms were as long as its height, and the creature's face had a mouth that stretched from side to side. It wore a gut-wrenching expression that could only be described as a smile due to the fact that it had no teeth. Just a huge mouth stretched agape with bleeding gums that dripped down to my wood floors. To me, it was an indication that this was not a figment of imagination, but a real dangerous threat, and I needed to step into action immediately. The thing let me soak in its disgusting appearance fully so that its next performance was all the more terrifying. It produced a series of guttural, horrid sounds that could only be described as its laugh. It witnessed me using every ounce of energy I had in my body to just cry out or move, finding amusement in my distress. All I could do was cry silently. My eyes strained with tears while I stared unblinking at the creature that slowly approached me like a lion would its wounded prey. It was just feet away now. Its long arms dangled behind its moving legs, dragging along the floor, still drumming its fingers to that nightmarish beat. The creature moved at a slow pace, taking advantage of my paralysis. It knew that dragging out this hellish scene would make the kill all more satisfying for its demented desire. At this short distance, I was able to see its face fully illuminated now, and it was awful. Still smiling with its red gums, its small eyes were as red as its anatomy allowed, and their gaze never left mine. It had a nose, but it was just two holes that looked like they were hand-poked by whoever created this awful thing. It was almost as if it were human, but the devil seemed to have poisoned this one. It was now close enough to smell my fear and see the glint of hope for survival fading in my eyes. I had to do something. Anything that would make me feel like I at least tried to fight for my life. That's when I saw it in the corner of my eye. This faint green glow is just inches away from my frozen hand. My bong. Amongst all the chaos, I forgot about it, but something within me screamed at me to try to move again. So I did. I focused all of my energy toward moving my hand to grab my newly chosen weapon. And by luck only created by a miracle, it worked. I was able to grab it, and within moments, I had swung the thick glass over the creature's head. Again and again and again. Its blood wasn't red like the color dripping from its toothless smile. Instead, it was dark black. The tar-like goo was everywhere. I felt it hit my face and go into my mouth. I saw it cover the couch, floors, and walls. The scene was brutal. The once terrifying creature was now smashed and bent into a multitude of ways, now left somewhere between the state of solid and liquid. Its face was no longer distinguishable from the other battered parts of its body, and I smiled. I smiled now that the thing no longer had his. I stood over its body with a mix of shock, adrenaline, and morbid joy that I would have almost laughed if it were not for my intense panting. I could not stop breathing, gasping for air as a rush of blood flowed to my brain. I awoke to the comforting feeling of bed sheets and a pillow under my head. The relief that this was all a dream showered over my body as I slowly opened my eyes and went to stretch my limbs. But I couldn't. My arms were prevented from moving further than at my hips. The sound of metal hitting against itself brought my attention to the handcuffs around my wrists that were connected to the bed's rails. Then, the slow and continuous beeping that was once hidden in the background got drawn forward as I began to scan my surroundings. I was in a hospital room, still covered in that sticky metallic-smelling substance, though it was not a deep black like I previously witnessed, but crimson red. The unfamiliar voice of a man brought me to the present and out of the fog. "Miss," the officer started in a low and careful tone. "Do you remember anything from last night?" The question made my face turn to an almost offended expression after a second of recollection. "Of course I did. I don't think I will ever be able to scratch that disgusting smile out of my memory. The immense fear I felt can still be there if I just close my eyes." Yes, it was the first time I heard my own voice in hours. There was this thing. The officer gave an unassumed look to his colleague as he let out a deep breath and laid a stack of images on my lap. My mother lay violently killed on our living room floor. If it weren't for her nursing uniform, I wouldn't have been able to tell that it was even human due to the unnatural state of anatomy she was in. Before I was able to even process what the officers were insinuating, I screamed. I screamed so loud that I felt my dry vocal cords rubbing against each other and let out a flood of tears that assisted the sobs of confusion, sadness, and anger. Out of my harsh cries, I recognized a hauntingly familiar sound. I looked up to see the officer drumming his fingers on his notepad and watched as his mouth started to stretch into that distinct, disgusting, and unforgettable toothless smile.